Welcome to Does the Team Think with Alfred Marx, Ted Ray, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And here comes a question from Mrs. Ethel Houghton. Hello, Mrs. Houghton. Your question, please.
Does the team think that nightmares are the result of a disturbed conscience? If so, do they turn over a new leaf?
Does the team think that nightmares are the result of a disturbed conscience? If so, do they turn over a new leaf?
I had an extremely bad experience talking of nightmares.
What was her name?
Well, no, I will come to that in a moment. I was talking to a pal one morning, and I said to him, I had a terrible dream. I dreamt I walked all the way from London to Brighton on my hands and knees. He said, I had a marvellous dream. He said, I dreamt that my bedroom door opened and two beautiful dolly birds walked in, and we had a marvellous evening. And I said, well, that's terrible, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's you with two dolly birds. Why don't you give me a ring? He said, I did ring you, but you were walking to Brighton on your hands and knees.
Just going to the trolley at the time.
Right. Cyril Fletcher.
My nightmare is shorter than that. I have this terrible nightmare where I am a washing machine. And I'm in the corner of the kitchen, and my eyes are rolling, and I'm shaking to and fro, and I'm eating sheets.
You're shaking what?
Eating sheets, yes. And Betty took me to the psychiatrist about this, you see, and she told him about this dreadful nightmare that I have. And the psychiatrist said, well, what do you think I can do with him? And Betty said, well, you might make him a little better with woolies.
This is quite true. You get these terrible traumatic experiences, you know. Now, I dreamt one night that I was eating shredded wheat, and when I woke up, half the mattress had gone.
Mrs. Houghton, I think we'll turn our attention to you for the moment. Do you suffer from nightmares?
Well, yes, I have had some, and some that have recurred from time to time. I think, really, well, it's being either shut in or shut out.
Having a nightmare. Really, the point is, people who sleep like a baby never have one.
Well, that's a very lovely thought, but, you know, I went to a village some time ago, well, during the war, when I was playing around with a, you know, sort of a company of Ensa.
Oh, yeah.
And in the... What do you mean,
oh, playing around with them.
Playing around, yeah. Did you get lucky? Anyway, we came near a very old manor house, you see, and the caretaker, came in the local pub and told us that this place was haunted, and everyone who went there had a nightmare. So one fellow said, well, I'll go. He'd had a few drinks. He went there, you see. Had quite a few drinks, he went in, and they bet him £10, some of the lads round the bar, he wouldn't stay the night. And true enough, at 3 o'clock in the morning, he had this terrible nightmare, and he heard a voice saying, there's only thee and me! And he said, if I can get these trousers on, there'll only be thee!
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you, Mrs. Hunt. Thank you very much. Team, here comes a question from Mr. G.G. Rudrum.
Does the team think the golf course is a good place for letting off steam?
Oh, dear. Does the team think the golf course is a good place for letting off steam? Ted Ray.
Well, there's no doubt about this. This is the thing I do when I get mad with Sybil sometimes, you know, and I jump in my car and I drive off furiously in all directions.
From which tee?
And I hit the ball for 2 hours and all my... You know, anger evaporates.
Well, I find it's absolutely the opposite, because I used to play golf and I gave it up for the simple reason that you can't let off steam. The minute you get angry on a golf course, the minute you get frustrated and angry and try and wallop that ball, then you play very bad golf.
I'm not a golfer. I often wish I were. I tried. I had probably one of the greatest coaches, Max Miller, the late and great Max Miller, tried to teach me to play golf, and he even made me a president of a set of clubs. But I'm hopeless at golf. I just can't hit a ball straight. And I play snooker. I enjoy snooker. But you look so silly playing that in plus fours, you know. My grandfather had a very unfortunate experience on a golf course. He didn't know it was a golf course. He was taking a shortcut home one day, and a golf ball hit him right in the back of the neck. And he went, it's up! I'm going to sue somebody for this. It's going to cost somebody £7,000. And a voice shouted, fours, I'll settle for four.
Well, golf, after all, does help one to express one's thoughts to a tee.
Oh, dear.
Three golfers get together and all they talk about is golf. And this thing about golf widows is quite real. I mean, these poor ladies They really are golf. I mean, that they really are neglected, totally neglected.
Well, so are brass band widows, and so are fishing widows.
Hardly,
and so are...
hardly. You can't hit a trombone 200 yards and then put it in.
I can. And,
I'm reminded of the chap who was taking lessons.
I thought you were going to tell a golf widow.
This
story.
Is not a golf widow story at all, actually. Quite the opposite. This chap, this is a true story. The chap who was taking lessons from a golf pro, and he was late one day, and the pro said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Terrible. Terrible accident," he said. "I was on the lawn at home," he said, "I was practicing swings," he said, "I didn't realise my wife was standing behind me," he said, I went back on the club," he said, "I cracked my wife's skull and she's dead." He said, "Good heavens." He said, "What club was it?" He said, "Number 5. He said, "It was the right club."
Let's get back to this point of letting off steam. You see, all kinds of people play golf these days. You get the reverend gentleman, and in my own club...
Oh, I know a joke about a reverend gentleman.
Oh, do tell it.
Playing golf. May I tell you that? It might be the same one.
Unless Mac promises me that he won't pay you off on this.
No, he won't.
Right.
No, after giving the vicar another severe beating, the golfer said, "Never mind, vicar, you'll probably bury me one day." And the vicar said, "Even so, that'll be your hole."
This fellow's been given this lesson. He says, "Now," he says, "you put the ball down on that tee and you wallop it with his driver." So he wallops it and it goes straight down onto the green and rolls within about 8 inches of the hole. And he says, "What do I have to do now?" He says, "You have to put it into the hole." He says, "Now," he tells me.
Very nice, Jim.
I think beautiful people. This bishop, you see, walked into our golf club, and there was a tournament on that day, a competition. But they'd all gone off, and there was one fellow sitting in the corner. And the bishop looked down and he said, "Are you free?" And this fellow said, "No, but I'm reasonable, you know." Out they went, and this fellow gave the bishop a terrible bashing. And when they came in, you see, having had this terrible hiding, the bishop said, "What is your name?" He said, "My name's Spencer." He said, "Oh, I see." He said, "Well, I'd like to do you a favour, Mr. Spencer." He said, "Come round with your father and mother to the church next week and I'll marry them."
Thank you, team, very much. And thank you, Mr. Rudrum. Thank you. And now, team, here comes a question from Mrs. Ride. Mrs. Ride, welcome to the programme. Let's
thank
hear
you.
Your question.
Does the team think the composing of limericks is a lost art?
Does the team think the composing of limericks is a lost art?
Mrs. Rye, there's been a very famous limerick made about your name. I don't know whether you know it. It's called "There Was an Old Lady from Ride Who Ate Some Green Apples and Died. The cider fermented inside the lamented and made cider inside her inside."
"I sat next to the Duchess at tea. It was just as I feared it would be. Her rumblings abdominal were truly phenomenal, and everyone thought it was me."
It proves that the limericks are not dead, nearly dead.
"There was a young lady named Etta who fancied herself in a sweater. Three reasons she had to keep warm was not bad, but the other two reasons were better." I'm not a limerickist. I'm an odd odour, and the team notice this occasionally. "Said a fair young maiden of Klondike, 'Of you I'm exceedingly fond, Ike. To prove I adore you, I'll dye my hair for you and be a brunette, not a blonde, Ike.'"
Well,
Mrs. Ride, do you have a favourite poem of your own, perhaps a limerick?
BBC has a radio team. To think is its aim and its dream. But they bubble with mirth, and of clues have a dearth, till Max says, "Behave, you're off beam."
Marvellous. Marvellous. Edward Lear would have loved it. I've just been writing one here.
Oh, yes.
Jim Edwards.
Dry, I see the ink's dry.
Jim Edwards on "Does the Team Think" would play games when he'd had a drink. A whiskey with ice, then he'd shake the dice, and each time he tiddled, he'd wink. It's very easy to write.
No, it isn't easy.
It is.
Be absolutely fair.
Would you give time to Edward
Lear? "There was a young man of Hong Kong who invented a topical song. It wasn't the words that bothered the birds. It was a horrible double entendre."
Well, what about the other one?
What other one?
"A young man from Burnham-on-Sea was quite prone to burp after tea. His wife, name of Gladys, said, 'Please eat that radish, then I know if it's you or it's me.'"
Thank you, team, very much, and thank you, Mrs. Rye. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest, a comedian who came from Australia to give a great deal of pleasure to British radio and television audiences. For many years, part-time keeper to Jimmy Edwards, a warm welcome, therefore, to Dick Bentley. Welcome to the program, Dick. Have a seat.
Make room for the wheelchair.
Yes. cheeky devil.
Cheeky devil he is. Dick, may we have your question, please?
Yes. Have members of the team ever considered settling down in Australia?
Have members of the team ever considered settling down in Australia?
You mean settling up in Australia? I love Australia.
You've been there?
I've been there. I have relations in Australia frequently.
They're very strange.
I love the place. Adore it. It's a great country.
It's a great shame they don't like you there, isn't it, really?
Jimmy, I don't think you can talk. I followed you into the Chevron Hotel when you were nearly clapped in irons for saying rude words.
Dick, it's nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
So hale and hearty.
Nice to be able to see you, yes.
I don't think many people would realise, after the way you posed that question, that you were an Australian. You have such a wonderful English accent.
That's affectation. And having worked for the BBC for all these years. Yes. As a matter of fact, in Australia, they think I'm a pup now.
Dear old Dick, let me ask you a question. If you're so anxious to, ship us all out to Australia, why do you live here?
I have a wife...
Make room for you over there. I
have a wife who was born in London, and she says Australia's a man's country. I think it is. That's why I got on so well there. And...
you're Bentley!
Oh, no, it all depends what you're doing. For instance, my great-grandfather...
Has he got rid of those arrows yet?
Well, the one I'm referring to was Bicarbonate Bentley. He...
Could you repeat that?
Yes, he left the... Old Bicarbonate Bentley, he left this country to go to Australia. In fact, Bicarbonate was one of the...
Come on!
One of the early settlers.
A doctor once asked his patients whether there was any mental disturbance in the family, and the patient said, "Well, Aunt Agatha did emigrate to Australia."
Oh. Why does she use that voice all the time? It's much better.
Can I just finish about my great-grandfather?
Oh, please, do. That was the end of it.
I feel a little sophistication will do wonders for the program.
Yes.
Yes, well, I told you about him, and he left this country. He sailed out. You remember his name was Bicarbonate. He sailed out in a windjammer. Now...
That's beans on toast, isn't it?
Yes. They caught it?
Yes. He was going to say that.
Eh?
Dick, carry on with your story. It's very interesting. No. What happened then?
In the old days, they used to have these corn races. You ask me why I'm here, to see who could bring the most grain in these sailing ships. They sailing ship from Australia to England, and...
Well, we're still...
I won. I brought the most corn from Australia to England.
Alfred, well, have you ever been to Australia?
Yes, I've been there four times.
Four times.
It's a great country. I love Australian humour. It's very dry. Oh, yes, I adore Australian humour. They're so dry. As you say, it's a man's country. I think this is a wrong picture, actually. It's not a man's country at all. It's a country for everyone. I'm reminded of a story told to me by an Australian about this Australian wedding out in the outback, which is unlike anything else in the world. These sheep farmers and people on these stations. And one fellow went and says, "Stop the wedding, the wedding's off. The wedding, we run out of beer, and some joker's just made love to the bride." And everybody was just packing up to go and face it. Hold it. The wedding's on again. We got some more beer, and the joker that made love to the bride's apologised.
Dick was talking about the corn races and the Cutty Sark days. The speed of today...
you can get to Australia in 36 hours.
A pilot told me the other day, just to show you the speed, they left London Airport to go to Australia... And they started off with a little sort of case in which were two rabbits. And when they got there, they still got two rabbits.
Can I answer, Ted?
I was rather hoping that Mr. MacDonald Hobley would ask Cyril Fletcher whether he had been to Australia.
Cyril Fletcher, have you been to Australia?
No, I've not been to Australia. I get sufficient work here.
I don't think a lot of people realise what Australia is all about. There were two ladies walking around Regent's Park Zoo the other day, and I happened to overhear the conversation after I moved a little nearer. And one was looking at one of these marsupials. It was a kangaroo. And one girl said to the other, they were obviously maiden ladies, she said, "What is that, Doris?" And she said, "That, my dear, it says on the little card, is a native of Australia." And the other one said, "Good God, my sister married one."
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you, Dick Bentley. Thank you very much, Dick. And now sitting on my right, we have Mr. John Dunford. Hello, Mr. Dunford. Question, please.
What indiscretion or misdemeanour, if any, committed by members of the team now sends a cold shiver down their spines or causes a hot flush to their faces when they recall it?
What indiscretion or misdemeanor, if any, committed by members of the team now sends a cold shiver down their spines or causes a hot flush to their faces when they recall it?
Were you by any chance, or are you by any chance, a police officer?
No, sir.
The way it's framed, that's all, you know. Did you want a 4th of July while proceeding in a southerly direction? Ever commit any misdemeanor like
The two words in this question that I enjoy so much are indiscretion and misdemeanor.
I know her very well. What a lovely girl.
And you created many an indiscretion with her.
My word, yes.
But we all have these things that you wake up in the middle of the night and clap your forehead with your sweaty hand and say, "Oh, God, did I say that?" I do this every night, actually, because every night I say something unfortunate and it's often difficult for me to remember what I've said.
It's when somebody else slaps your forehead with a sweaty hand and says, "Did you say that?"
I was 6, Mr. Dunford, and I was asked to be a page...
Happy birthday.
I was asked to be a page at a wedding. And I'd never done this before, and you don't like to be in one of these nasty little tussle suits and that when you're 6. And I was the only attendant at the wedding, and I had to hold the bouquet and the prayer book and all the paraphernalia. And I got rather tired at 6, you know, holding this, kneeling there behind the bride and that. So I put it all rather gently, the bouquet, on the tiles of the sort of thing. And an aunt of mine on the side said, "Pick them up." And I said, "No." And she said, "Pick them up." And I just refused to pick them up. And to get my own back, I picked every single flower head off the bouquet and shoved them down the grating. And so I then followed the bride with a horrible little collection of stalks. When and I wake up screaming about that.
When you said pick them up, I thought your trousers had dropped.
I had a very nasty experience during the war.
What was her name?
Well, yes, indeed. What was her name? I was motoring along on the Great North Road, and it was late at night, and a blonde was hitchhiking, and I stopped the car, I usually do for blondes, and she got in very attractive. But it was a blackout, because I couldn't see very much, and she had a very nice... She sat down, and we were motoring along, and when we got to Grantham, I thought, well, this is... You know, she didn't say a word, so I put my hand on her knee. I was single, a bachelor then. A bachelor is a man who comes to work each morning from a different direction, you know. So I was...
So many jokes involved in this.
You know what I mean?
Follow
well,
it.
I've got to get a few laughs.
You've got your left hand on her leg at the moment.
She leaned sideways and said, "Don't scream when you get to me football shorts. I'm a sailor on the run."
What kind of women do you pick up out here?
I'm beginning to wonder.
When you refuse to go any further with a sailor, did he say tar?
That actually does remind me of a fairly similar story, so I'll cut it short. But this is true, not like that one you just told. This is true about being embarrassed. The question is about being embarrassed. I was first on tour with dear old Freddie Frinton. You remember Freddie?
Of course.
Years
sugar
ago.
In the morning, sugar in the summertime.
Thank you, that'll do. And I was very fresh to show business, And I didn't know what it was all about. And then we'd been on tour in this...
We haven't learned much.
You've still got the blossom on your nose, Jimmy.
And he said to me, after we'd been on two or three weeks, he said, "Are you going on for crumpet, do you see?"
Just at the stage whisper from Dick Bentley saying, "You better come off, Jim."
No, that's what the actress said. Now listen, so no,
come on, Jim, try again.
Story. He said, "Are you going on for crumpet?" You see, yeah. And I said, "I beg your pardon." And he said, "Are you getting, you know, girlfriends?" And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, no." He said, "Well, top of the bill, first crack at the chorus, you know."
What a lovely show you were in.
It was in the days when they could afford to have 20 chorus girls.
Get away.
And I said, "There is one, as a matter of fact, and all the lovely, you know." He said, "We'll have a bit of a party Tuesday night, and you take her home, and off you go." You see what I mean? So... So we had this party, and I said, "Oh, good gracious, I must pop along now. You see, can I give you a lift home to this girl?" In my most refined manner. And it was on, near Portsmouth, this party. And up on those big downs where the guns and everything are, you know.
Yes,
all the radar and everything.
Yeah. Radar's my father.
I switched the engine. Shut up! I switched the engine
Sign
off.
Sign of Asia, we've got to look for it with radar.
I switched the engine off, and I said, "Oh, good gracious, we seem to run out of petrol, you see." It was a terrible... tawdry thing to do. Tawdry is
the word. Were you flying at the time or driving the car?
No, and so I then made a motion towards her.
You made what? Oh, what a time to do that. What a time to do that.
All I can say is I made a move.
You certainly did.
Towards her. And she clipped me one round the ear hole, and for the rest of the run, none of the chorus spoke to me.
Thank you, Tamer. Thank you, Mr. Dunford. Thank you very much. And, team, sitting on my right is Mrs. Margaret MacDonald. Mrs. MacDonald, welcome to the programme. A question.
Does the team think it is ever justified to drop a friend of long standing because of an imaginary or real slight or just boredom with their company?
Does the team think it is ever justified to drop a friend of long standing because of an imaginary or real slight or just boredom with their company?
Mrs. Margaret MacDonald, would you ask your husband a question for me? How's the farm getting on?
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear, he said. You with all those 15,000 Herefords.
They're actually Frisians.
Can you try and answer my question, cars, team, please?
My cars are Frisians, but we give them hot water bottles.
You do that once more. I'll go back to the Euphonium game.
I think Mrs. MacDonald obviously was talking about a haggis or something like that. But really, Mrs. MacDonald, the point is, with your friends, if they play the bagpipes, they don't stay your friends very long, do they?
The word is bagpipe. Not pipes.
Indeed, yes.
I tell you, when I did drop a friend, and I did this deliberately, when I played golf with this fellow regularly, Tuesdays and Thursdays, he always had more mud on his shoes than I did at the ninth hole. Scraped them, you know, and almost got the boot polish out and cleaned them because he wanted me in the bar first. And then I'd buy the two beers. Truly, I'd buy the two beers, and then he'd look at his watch and say, when we'd finished, "Good heavens, I must pick up the wife. She's fallen down again." So I thought enough of that, so I dropped him. Do you blame me?
No, but...
I hate to point out and to bring attention to the fact that I am the erudite member of the panel.
You're the what?
But the erudite member of the panel. But Cocteau... was once asked his opinion... Cocteau was once asked his opinion of hell and heaven, and
we're
he said
about long standing,
he wouldn't give his opinion because he had friends in both places.
That's a good one, yes. Well, he had a point there.
I lost a good friend once because I was woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning, which I don't like
and
particularly.
She left.
No, this was a phone call from my friend who was in Manchester. My ex-friend, who was in Manchester.
Cocteau?
No, Hardly. And,
Hardly.
Oh. And Alfred Hardly, his name was. And I can't bear being woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And he said, "Alf." He said, "Alf." He was my old school chum from Rodine. He said, "Alf." He said, "Alfie boy, I'm in terrible stuch. I've got to have 100 quid immediately get me out of trouble. I said, pardon? He said, I'm in terrible trouble. I need 100 quid to get me out. I said, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. The line is terrible. He said, I need 100 quid. I said, I can't hear you. And just at that moment was a click. And the operator said, I can hear. I said, would you lend him the bloody 100?
Thank you very much indeed. And thank you, Mrs. McDonald. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Alfred Marks, Ted Ray and Siddle Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and, of course, our special guest, Dick Bentley. This is McDonald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.